Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008. Joining us on the line is Professor Adrian Puren. He, of course, is the Acting Executive Director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. A very, very good morning to you, Professor. How are you?
Thanks very much. Good morning, Harvey, and to your listeners as well. Thank you.
So it's we clearly are in the midst of the third wave, whatever that might mean, if it still might gather. In fact, I'm sure it will still gather momentum as we go. I'm hearing lots and lots of stories around people around me within our community who are ill, who have been exposed, whose children have become ill. And we were wondering, we noted that there was, of course, the difference between the first wave and the second wave. It might be still too early to tell in terms of the third wave, but are we seeing anything different? Are we seeing different patterns?
Well, I suppose geographically, I suppose, Harvey, there has been a change. As you know, the Northern Cape, for example, really continued along its second into third wave, as well as the Free State, as well, you know, just simply for a day or two went out of its second wave, then certainly re-entered the third wave. And now we're certainly, and I think the Northwest, for all intents and purposes, has entered the third wave. But I have not seen a declaration for that. And as you know, the Premier of Gauteng had certainly declared that Gauteng was in the third wave. Technically, you know, if you look at how these waves are declared, it's based really on a particular incidence or numbers of cases per 100,000. So once you reach that particular threshold, then technically you've entered the third wave. And of course, the peak of that third wave will be dependent on the numbers of cases, and that can go on for 2 to 3 months, for example. So with regard to the technical declarations, these will probably vary by province, as we've seen in the first and second waves. Although we started off, for example, with, let's say, the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape in the first wave, and then in the second wave started off with the Eastern Cape, followed by the Western Cape, and then followed by the other provinces. This time around, we started off with the inland province, if you like, and then the rotation will end up with the coastal provinces, especially KwaZulu-Natal, ending up at the later phase of this particular third wave.
And in terms of the patterns of illness, one of the comments that Dr. Myberg made to me, I think it was last week, is, and he, again, he said it was too early to tell, but what he is seeing is, whereas in the first wave, to a lesser extent in the second wave, but more, you know, is in the first wave, you could see one person in a family becoming ill, maybe a second. In the second wave, there were a few more people. Now, he says, what he seems to be seeing is, if a family is ill or somebody in the family is ill, it is going through that family quite extensively. So it's again, maybe anecdotal, but it seems to be potentially more transmissible. What's your thought on that?
It's a difficult one. I know that there are some studies that are currently ongoing to determine patterns of transmissions in households, so we'll certainly see the results of that. You're quite right. I think one needs to be concerned if we think that, for example, there are, as you know, this virus and this particular variant that we have in South Africa is highly transmissible. And I suppose the other considerations are that we have two other variants that are also transmissible as well. And there's ongoing molecular surveillance to determine whether or not those particular variants are taking hold in South Africa. But it's difficult and early to tell whether that is the case. And therefore, anecdotally, we just need to keep an eye out on what's actually happening within those particular clusters, where there's high levels of transmission or unexpected high levels of transmission, just to determine whether or not it could be the new variants that have entered into South Africa.
Has the style of, within, let's say, the NICD, has the style of examining and putting out information changed, given the fact that the reaction time needs to be a lot quicker in order to save lives? In other words, the NICD, as far as I understand, is a very science and data-based organization. It's got to be quite difficult for an organization like the NICD, who is very, as I say, scientifically driven and data-driven, to make recommendations without the data, but very often in a case like this, where we've got so many moving parts and so many things happening at different times, you're almost forced to step into a realm of discomfort. I imagine this is how I'm picturing it. Give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so discomfort in the sense that very often the science or the information is not always there.
Yes, that's what I mean. That's
yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, the models are the models. They paint scenarios based on what we have in terms of the data that we have. And obviously, as data becomes more available, then one can try and modulate and or create a more nuanced model. So, for example, the model that I'm speaking about now to you is really a model that did not take into account the variants that there are currently in circulation in South Africa, but soon that will be taken into account. In addition, the model will also need to start taking into account the levels of vaccination in the country. So that's also going to be a critical part to this. As I understand it, the Department of Health's intention is, for example, to vaccinate at least the majority of the healthcare workers. So that will take us to at least, I would think, 1 million individuals. But again, that's, you know, only a proportion of that. It's also trying to focus on vaccinating the more vulnerable, the additional vulnerable groups, such as those that are within particular age groups again. But we may not, you know, be able to stave off that third wave to create sufficient vaccine coverage to really protect those individuals. So it will then, that model will say, well, you'll still need, you know, the non-pharmaceutical interventions in order for us to really try and stave off the third wave. So, but you're quite right about being agile, in other words. You know, what does this data mean? And in other words, should some decisions be made now? What are the signals for the departments of health at national and provincial level to say, okay, so this is the information we do have now. What steps do we need to take in terms of being prepared? You know, we certainly are speaking about the reinforcement or re-engagement around the wearing of masks, physical distancing. We've had all these so-called clusters outbreaks at schools, universities, and so forth. Are there any additional steps that need to be considered or be prepared to take in order to try and stave off the third wave?
Just to reiterate, because I saw a lot of questions yesterday about this. People who have been vaccinated, perhaps 2 weeks into their vaccination period or even a month into the vaccination period, if they come into close contact with somebody who is COVID positive, they do need to self-quarantine. Is that correct?
At this stage, I'm not aware of that, but it's an interesting point. Again, it's something I think we would have to explore and determine. I think
as more people become vaccinated, and they're not going to be coming across other people who haven't been and who might be COVID positive, these are the types of questions I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of as we go through almost that transition stage till 28 days of after vaccination and then so on.
So I'm not aware of a policy that if you came into contact, if you've been vaccinated, if you come into contact with someone who has, who is tested positive COVID-19, that you should then go into quarantine. I think you should still be, obviously, we re-emphasize the point, even though you've been vaccinated, you should be still wearing your masks and taking the necessary, steps. However, you could keep a track of your, symptoms and so on in case there is a breakthrough infection, in which case you would want to test. So we are going to have breakthrough infections.
Yes, of course. And in fact, one of our listeners is asking, I think, about the MEC who has had the vaccine in February and now is COVID positive.
Yes, absolutely. So we do expect to see breakthroughs. I haven't seen those numbers yet, but I'm sure the numbers will come through. As you know, there is a hospital-based line system for us to get a sense of around how many people have been vaccinated and are those the breakthrough infections that we're seeing in the current third wave.
Absolutely. So at this stage, what you're seeing in terms of the third wave, are you reasonably comfortable that it's not a new variant, that it's one of the, it's either the last variant that we came across or perhaps you know, one of the invariants from the other countries, but it's not something completely new, or is it too early to say?
In the main, I would think that it's still the current variant is the one that we experienced in the second wave. I think we just need to keep an eye out in terms of the other two variants. You know, if they do take hold, they could displace, and that could create a new scenario for us. But at this time, it's the current variant that was dominant, yes.
And that's unfortunately where we do have to leave it. Professor Adrian Puren, thank you as always. The professor is the executive director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases.